Elton John, and I've discovered that this song is our guest's favourite Elton John song, Rocket Man. Didn't know that was going to happen. It's one of those nice things. Now retired from a career as a musician, radio presenter, radio producer and documentary maker, Nick Barraclough was invited several years ago by a friend to tell a story at True Stories Told Live. That was down at Hampstead in North London. It was a small gathering in a tiny room, but Nick was hooked. So he bought True Stories Told Live to Cambridge, and Nick is here now. We may even get a nice story out of him this morning, Nick.
Hello.
Welcome. Paul. Nice to hear you.
Thank you.
On Cambridge 105 Radio. I know you've been in a couple of times, but it's nice to have you in front of me now as one of the legends of radio from the 1980s. But that's not what you're in to talk about today. It's what you're going to be doing this evening down at the NCI Club in Holland Street. Spread the word. I don't know what we need to, Nick. You might well be turning people away at the door. I was very impressed with some of the photographs I saw. A little Facebook page that you have. You sort of keep up to date there. The number of people that come in through the door.
That's crazy. I still irritate people in pubs who think they've gone in for a quiet drink when they find, oh Lord, there's a band and I'm that band in the corner. And so I'm playing quite a lot and scrabbling around for audiences a lot of the time, trying to get an audience for this band and that band. With this particular thing, with True Stories, the problem is getting the turn, because we always get the audience. It's fantastic. It's so popular. We had no idea, really. And I think it's the simplicity of it that makes it work. Quite simply, five people plus me, so six altogether, tell a story. The rules are up to 10 minutes. Doesn't have to be exactly 10 minutes, but up to 10 minutes. True, about yourself. Without a script, so it's, you know, just got to stand there and tell it, and that's it. So it is as simple as that. One person does that and does some music as well. We've had everything from singer-songwriters to harp players and all sorts. We've got a house band, me and Dave Olney. We'll back anybody. I think it's the fact that the audiences come; they don't pay anything. They pay, I think, a couple of pounds because it's the NCI Club, so you've a sort of membership thing, and it goes to the club. So the whole ethos of it is to go and sit down, and it's a gentle, not like stand-up, which can be confrontational. It's a gentle evening, and there very often are a lot of laughs. The majority of stories are light-hearted, but we welcome the harrowing as well. We welcome that people have come and talked about being sent away to live with an aunt who they hated, that sort of thing. We've heard stories of people whose daughter collapsed on a street in New York and how she was dealt with. And those stories are just as valuable. And the most wonderful thing is, as I've noticed a couple of times, that we have True Stories, and about a week or two later, you bump into a friend or something in Cambridge, and they said, oh, did you hear about that bloke who did such and such? And you realise that's the story that was told, that's gone around the city and has come and comes back. Because people, it's like a great big middle-class Cambridge supper party. That's what it's like, with lots of people sitting around. Only there's 100 people there. And the audience is just fabulous and supportive, and people are terrified. A lot of people are terrified of telling stories.
Afraid of public speaking, I suppose.
Yeah.
People have never really got up and done it before. Maybe they've sat in the audience maybe for a couple of sessions before and then got the courage to do this.
We've had a few people say, yes, I will. No, I can't. Maybe next time. But I've always said it's very much like a parachute jump, apparently, which I would never dream of doing. But people do it. They're terrified of doing it. They do it, and then they want to do it again. So we get returners.
With another new story, of course. Do you think you've ever caught anybody out, though, that might have made something up a little bit?
I kind of don't mind. I think it's probably wise not to let the facts completely get in the way of a good story.
And I
do say to people, do think about the story you're going to tell. Because this poor guy, the first story we ever had when we first did it, we didn't know what was going to happen. It was at the Punter in those days on Northampton Street. And this guy got up and he had a spear with him. I thought, what? Why is he? He had this spear. And he stood there and he said, I want to tell you about the Serengeti. And so he started talking about the flora and fauna of the Serengeti. 5 minutes in, I was thinking, please just say, anyway, one day. But he didn't. He just kept on. And I realised the guy thought he was going to give a talk.
A proper lecture
so
on the Serengeti.
So he gave a talk for 10 minutes. And this is what the natives use to hunt. Oh, for goodness sake. So that, and I thought this is a disaster. We should never have started.
But then, of course, he hadn't got into the format because he'd not been before. Because none of you had ever done anything like this at this particular venue. He'd never been along.
He just thought, you come get up and talk for 10 minutes about something you're interested in.
Yeah.
So now I say to people, please tell a story about one thing that happened to you, about something that happened to you. Something's got to happen in this story. It can't be. Occasionally we have people talk about a holiday they went on. Oh, and then we went to so-and-so, and then we went to so-and-so. And, you know, we met this couple, and they knew some people we knew in Trumpington. And that's kind of not really what we're looking for. We're looking for a story that has a beginning and a middle and, most importantly, an end.
Which is like a structure of any short story, of course.
Yeah.
You may have read Graham Greene or whatever you've read in the
past.
But
it's extraordinary how we get people who we get two things quite often. I mean, they're all great, and I admire everyone for telling a story. And if some stories are better than others, that's fine, because they've done it. They've gone to the bother. They've worked it up. They've practiced it. They've come and done it. But we get very often a really good story that wasn't framed quite as it could have been.
You feel like you want to sort of do a bit of editing, but you haven't got a script.
Like, exactly. Like, if it were a documentary, you see, I'd edit it. And so you get a really good story, and you say, oh, no, just stop there. Just stop there. That's the best bit. And then they go on, it kind of lose the effect. You also get people. A guy came last session and talked about the fact that he was hopeless at skiing. And that was basically it. He went skiing, and he wasn't very good at it. Now, that isn't a story, but the way he told it was fantastic. And this bloke who kept getting his name wrong. And he wove that into the story and ended up with the guy making big friends with him at the end and then finally getting the name wrong. So it had a perfect ending. So it wasn't a great story, but he told it brilliantly.
It's those subplots that can go in, Nick, with the main story and then the little anecdotal bits that you can put in the side.
Absolutely.
And that's where you can probably get the fun out of it.
But sometimes people go too far with that and they go off on a tangent and they forget to come, or they don't
come quite
back into it. Yes.
Where do you get your right? Because you do one of the monologues, if I can call it that, on stage. It's almost a bit like the series Would I Lie to You on television.
Yeah.
You think, well, the celebrities, really, has all this happened to you in your life?
Yeah,
you know, this is Sid, and I know Sid because Sid went up the ladder and then one of the rungs broke on the ladder and he ended up in the bath with me because he crashed through the window or whatever.
Yeah.
And you've seen, is it true or false? And you think, well, has this all really happened so much to you? You have to tell a different story every time you have this session. Do you find enough about you to be interesting to tell others for 10 minutes?
I confess I'm bringing back a few that I told a few years ago, but the audience is different. I've asked them occasionally who's been before, and the fewer there are. I'll be telling a story tonight that I did tell some years ago. About being over complacent in one's travelling plans and getting wrong airports and forgetting passports and so on.
I've done
and
this.
How I got that.
I was at Chicago O'Hare and I was talking to my colleague. We were doing a transit. We'd come back from Indianapolis. We were going to get onto the London flight because they didn't fly from Indianapolis. We sat there with a slush puppy, other ice drinks, nice and cool, can be available in the airport. And we were called, including our names, Rowan. I'd never been so embarrassed in my life because I'd always joking about people that missed their flights that gone through airside and checked through.
Yeah.
And yes, I was that Muppet that did that.
Well, I was reminded of this by my sister who told me last week how she went to visit her son in Leipzig, which she does frequently, but decided to go on the train and went and got to St. Pancras on the train. And when the chap having a cup of coffee next to her, said to his wife, "You have got the passports, haven't you?" She thought, "No, I haven't got mine."
But I thought you had them.
I shouldn't be saying this, but my sister, being the person she is, bludgeoned her way through, and they took her on her driving license, which is rather amazing. And no, and came back, and she got back. They said, "We can let you go, but you might not get back again." But so anyway, that reminded me of that story. So I'll be telling the story of my travel woes when I was doing it a lot for the BBC in the 90s, and I got a little bit cavalier about the whole business.
How so? That's an intriguing remark there.
Well, I don't want to give. Well, actually, what are the chances? Okay, I'll say. What happened was the first one. I went to. Got the car to pick me up, flying to Cincinnati, which is a hub for then flying to Nashville, and flight leaving at 11:30. Got the car, got me there at 9:30 in the morning at Gatwick Airport, and I stood there with the ticket, and I thought, okay, BA da, 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 flight to flight this is 11:30. I looked up on the board; it wasn't there. I checked the times and the date again. And it was the right date, the right flight. It just wasn't there. It didn't say cancelled or anything. And I read it again, the dead date, and it said flight at 11:30, Heathrow Airport. Heathrow Airport.
Uh-oh, OK. Yeah. Had you got time to...
Not do... Gatwick.
You didn't have the time to do the transfer?
I had 2 hours. And I said, what's the quickest way to get to Heathrow? And they said, it's the bus. I thought, give me a helicopter. What? I've got to go. I've got an interview tomorrow morning. Somebody important. And I got the bus. And cutting that story, it'll go on longer than this tonight. The bus got me there within about 45 minutes of the plane leaving, and I ran to the gate, and the people standing there as they're shuffling their papers and going, I said, I only had hand baggage.
And you're one of those that normally turns up about 4 hours before your flight because you're nice and relaxed.
No, I was getting more and more sloppy about it. And so they said, why are you late? And I said, I went to the wrong airport. And you could see them think, terrorist or idiot? Okay, idiot.
It's like one of those cheesy lines from a Hollywood plot, isn't it? You find something like that. I was in Norwich with a customer, and arriving the loading bay was this lorry, and says, I've got XYZ delivery for you, sir. And it comes. No idea. Why would we want these things? They're completely aloof to what that would be wanted by this particular company. The driver should have gone to Northwich, not Norwich.
Oh.
And of course, the satellite navigation, and he'd put in, thought it was going to be Northwich in Cheshire, and he ended up in Norwich.
Oh.
One of those little things that happen. Nick, you've got several people lined up for this evening. You've had people like Mike Clifford, Jonathan Kay, Morag Stiles from the City of Cambridge, your good self, Rachel Extance and Richard Cook. You'll have some music this evening as well.
Yep.
Get there for around about 7:15. A good time to arrive to enable you to get a drink and find a seat.
Actually, if you want to get a drink and a seat, get there at 7:00.
Oh, wow.
The bar, they're lovely in there. They really are, but there's a long queue at the bar.
I like the intimacy because I know the NCI Club, and you've got a little sort of semicircular podium in the corner, so you're just a bit above the audience.
Actually, we don't do that. We used to use the stage, but because the seat had to go so far back, if you imagine it's a rectangle and you're at the short end, as it were, now we stand in the middle and with the seats arranged around us in a curve. Because then people aren't quite so far.
A little like an amphitheatre.
Not all of us here as well as we used to.
Hey, can't hear because you're talking away from me, the back of you. But that's a difficult thing, I suppose, if you rotate around.
Absolutely.
Lovely to see you, Nick. £2 entry fee if you don't want to go along this evening. I'm sure you will find room. Get there early, as Nick says. You need a day membership, and then you can go to the bar and get actually a little bit of a cheaper drink.
Yes,
because you can be treated like a club member. Nick Barraclough, you also found, quickly, before we go, an ancestor's grave at Niagara Falls, which is what you were talking about earlier on in this year.
That was my story last time, yes. I was interviewing Oscar Peterson in Toronto and had a day off, and my grandfather, who William Webb, who had Webb's toy shop and electrical shop on Mill Road on the wrong side of the bridge.
Is there a wrong side of the bridge?
Yeah, there wasn't those days. My mother's family lived there, that's probably why. He always maintained that Captain Matthew Webb, the first man to swim the channel, was related to us. My mother's maiden name was Webb. We're not sure about that, but Captain Matthew Webb died attempting to swim the rapids of Niagara Falls And that's where he was buried, and I found his gravestone there.
Wow, and you've done a lot, much travelling, Nick. An interesting little story. My finger cot story, I think, will be for another day.
Well, I look forward to it. We're going to get you along to do it, Phil. I think
it's not normally I ever talk about me. It's very strange outside of my comfort zone because I'm talking about me.
Sounds intriguing.
It's really awkward. I'll perhaps tell you we're off air in a little while. Thank you very much, Nick, for coming in. I hope we see and hear a little bit more of you at Cambridge 105 Radio in the future.
I hope so.
It's nice.
You.
I know you're retired, but we kind of got you out of your box this morning, dusted you down and had you along.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to have you on the air with us. Thank you very much.